Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here once a week at our kitchen table to talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. And we are here at the studios of KHOI Community Radio in the center of Ames. We're at center of Ames, Iowa, the center of Iowa, the center of it all. Community Radio is a real fine thing to be part of. And thanks for joining us at our table. Well, here we are, kind of sliding into summer. It's 4th of July coming up, and surprisingly cool, Donna, after a
cool
dry
and wet, yeah.
And here I sit in a sweater, and it's 4th of July coming up. But we,
don't worry, it could change by the 4th.
It could change.
It's only
the
2nd today. So
I had a fortuitous garlic harvest. Thanks for your help, Donna. We got the garlic up and in the barn before the rain, so it's a good summer so far.
We're moving right along.
And if we think we have strange weather, I talked to my brother in Montana who gardens up a storm out there. We compare garden notes often. And he said, believe it or not, mid-June they had a hard frost. Totally wiped out his tomato crop, which he just loves his garden. And this was not a good year for tomatoes in Montana. So it can happen to the best of us. Oh, happy birthday to my brother anyway. It's his birthday today. Well, I'm going to be talking about blueberries. What can be better than blueberries?
Blueberries for the 4th of July.
Isn't that nice? We're going to be talking to a woman who has an organic Yupik blueberry and strawberry farm called Blueberry Bottom Farm in Brighton, Iowa. And a blurb about her says, her farm has experienced incredible growth since 2017. And that's the kind of words we like to hear on the farm, incredible growth. So Kim Anderson is with us at our table today. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen, Kim.
Thank you.
Good. So Kim Anderson is from Blueberry Bottom Farm in Brighton, Iowa. Where is Brighton, Iowa?
Brighton is in the city of Brighton is actually in Washington County, about 15 minutes south of Washington, Iowa. I live east of there, so I'm actually in Jefferson County, Iowa.
Good, good.
So most of your, for your U-Pick, most of your people are coming from the Iowa City, Cedar Rapids area?
We have a lot from there. We have a lot from Fairfield. There's a lot of organic eaters in the Fairfield community. Also from the towns of Mount Pleasant and Washington. Mm-hmm. Somebody was just commenting in the field this morning how many that I should be taking pictures of all the license plates where everybody's
gone. Oh, that's good. So tell us about your farm. Tell us about how you got started.
So I moved to the farm in 2006, just really to live on the acreage. I'd always wanted to live here growing up. This was my grandparents' place, and I loved coming here. I never wanted to go home. And so we moved here, remodeled the house, which was a 1959 George Jetson house, I called it. It was not very farmhousey. It was very modern. So we remodeled and moved in, and then I was diagnosed with a second cancer, and that kind of that year of healing and reflection just got me thinking about the rest of the farm and what was going on with it and talking to my siblings about maybe making some changes. So we decided to transition our farm to organic, and a part of that, we looked into growing unique or different or niche crops. We planted an orchard in 2014 with chestnuts, hazelnuts, pawpaw, and
ooh,
cinnamon.
Nice.
And then in 2017, my husband gave me an ultimatum. I'd been talking about this blueberry thing for years. I'd been going to Illinois for 20 years picking blueberries, and I said I really wanted to have a field of blueberries. And one night at dinner, when I told him I dreamt the name, Blueberry Bottom Farm. He said, you either need to do this or quit talking about it.
So, that's what husbands are for,
right? It's kind of a dangerous statement because then I think the next day I might have actually been ordering plants. I really took that as a call to action and started the planting process. And so then in 2017, planted 5.5 acres of high bush blueberries. And using organic practices only. As far as I know, I'm the only certified organic blueberry farm in Iowa. There are other growers using organic, but they don't do the certification process.
Well, blueberries are a challenging sort of crop. And what was on the land before you put in your organic blueberry place? Because there's a transition time.
Right, and we did go through the transition. The field where the blueberries are is just right next to my house on a river bottom. It's a silty loam soil, but it's also got a lot of sand in it. And we did amend the soil 1 year in advance. They recommend doing it 2 years by putting some sulfur and rock phosphate and things like that. And we did it just in the row where the plants were going to go instead of over the entire field. I hired a surveyor to come help me, like, lay out the rows so we would be able to. And then we grew rye there to that winter after we laid it out to try and suppress weeds. Yeah, I guess I could have planted the plants earlier during that transition, but I didn't know that at the time. So we actually went through the transition of the ground from 14 to 17 and then planted the blueberries.
Fantastic. The idea of, I've looked into planting, not as many as you, but blueberries, what a good idea. But this idea of blueberries don't just plain like Iowa soil straight. They have to have amendments. Do you have to add, like you said, sulfur and rock phosphate occasionally or often or just to get them going?
So we do have to continue to add that to keep that pH low because probably the two biggest factors in growing blueberries are having the pH around 5, and the second one is to get them in enough water but not have them standing in water. They require so much water, and the last two seasons for us, two summers, were really challenging because of drought. And we water with well water through our irrigation system, and our well water wasn't keeping up. The ground water level had, you know, was so low that the well wasn't putting out enough water fast enough. So last year we got a grant from American Farmland Trust. We put two tanks in the field so that we could store up the water and then pump it out of those tanks, do the actual irrigation or watering, and that really helped. And then this spring, as you know, we've had a pretty wet spring, so I think there's nothing better than rain.
Oh, good.
Oh, man, yeah.
Fantastic. Good. You mentioned high bush blueberries. There's a high bush and low bush. Is there a difference besides being tall and short?
There are different varieties, but the tall and short is the biggest difference. There's also a rabbit eye variety, I think, that's grown more in the south. They're growing high bush blueberries, though, in Florida now. I used to think of those as more the northern variety, but they are growing them in Florida as well. So, yeah, and another reason that we're seeing the growth is it takes years to get blueberries established. So in 2017... plants that we put in were all 2 and 3 years old. So now they're adults. Now this year they're turning 10.
Wow, it is really
10 years is kind of the adult marker in a blueberry world.
And how long did they last?
Can live as long as 50 years.
Oh, my. Oh, good. So it's a steep uphill beginning, and then it's perennial, basically. Yeah,
perennial.
Goodness. Did you always plan on it being a U-pick operation, or did you have big plans for picking everything yourself?
Oh, no. I knew I couldn't pick it all myself, and it definitely was designed as a U-pick. Everything from our row spacing to our variety choice is based on it being a U-pick. We don't have any small berries. We picked varieties that were rated large to extra large in berry size so that people can fill a bucket quickly.
Oh, very good.
Well, and they must be really big and juicy this year, huh, with all the rains?
Yeah, we measured some the other day that made a quarter look tiny.
Whoa.
They were bigger than a 50-cent piece.
Blueberry? That's
yeah,
the size
I have a variety called Chandler, and they look like a little plum.
Oh, wow.
Now, is this, I suppose.
That's worth a drive over to the eastern part of the state.
So blueberries are growing and improving and doing. Now, blueberries grow on bushes, except the low bush ones, as I remember from living in Wisconsin, up in the north, they can sort of grow wild. And those people had to pick on their knees because that's low. But one nice thing about blueberries is you can pretty much just stand there or sit on a stool, and they don't have thorns. What could be better?
Have seeds for cooking. That's a really, really important thing. Like if you want to make blueberry ice cream, you don't have to strain it the way you do with strawberry ice cream or raspberry ice cream. I love blueberries. They are the easiest fruit to bake with. No pits, no seeds, and fantastic flavor. Oh my goodness.
You talked about planting the crop and amending the crop. Do you have to do anything else to make sure that these berries get into people's buckets? I mean, you mentioned
managing the irrigation is a big part and very time consuming. I can tell you that last night I was going out to the field to deliver some berries to the refrigerator at the farm stand, and the irrigation had just kicked in zone one, and a pesky little rabbit had gotten past our barrier fence and chewed a huge hole in the irrigation line. So it was spraying like 10 feet in the air. And I had to stop everything I was doing and make that repair. And I finally able to saw the rabbits. I've had some damage last fall and could not figure out what was doing it. I even had put a trail cam up and couldn't catch any critters biting these tubes. But last night I saw the bandit in person. So.
Rabbit stew, yes.
Oh, my. Well, so that's pretty much a challenge because there's an investment and a lot of work to put in irrigation. Your irrigation lines are laying on top of the ground or are they buried?
They're laying on top, and that's for a reason. I debated, and a lot of people said to bury them, but I want to see when I have a problem.
Uh-huh. Right, and you can find the leak immediately.
Right, you can see it. The other thing is now I'm transitioning. I've been using hardwood chip mulch that I get directly from a sawmill in the row, but I'm starting to get away from that. I went to a field day last September at Little Hill Berry Farm up south of the Twin Cities, and he's been growing blueberries, I think, 2011, so, six years longer than I have. And he kind of broke down, too. We both hated to do it because we like the natural aspect of using the wood chips. But especially during the drought, the weeds take over, in that wood chip. And you spend so much time weeding. And then the weeds are robbing the moisture from the blueberry plant.
Right.
When you pull the weeds, you end up doing a lot of root pruning or damage to the roots. Because blueberry roots are very shallow. Sometimes you'll even find them basically on top of the ground right under the mulch. So we're moving to this woven fabric. And we've got, I don't know what percent of our field done. But so far I'm loving it. It's holding the moisture better, which means we can cut down on our run times for the irrigation and save on that energy and water usage. So, and then just saving on labor for all the weeding.
And how long does that woven fabric last?
That's what I don't know, and it is allowed in organic. They just say that once you start to see it deteriorate, then you need to replace mm-hmm. it. So I guess I don't know, since the guy in Minnesota hadn't had it down long enough to really have to replace any yet.
Yeah.
But I know my irrigation lines lasted, they lasted 6 years before I had to replace some tubing.
Yeah.
So I do have a problem with high iron in my water, which has created a real challenge. It makes those little emitters in the irrigation tubes clog.
Oh, yeah,
so
lots of minerals.
That's another challenge that we deal with, yeah.
Oh, my.
And then since I'm moving to the fabric, I'm moving to fertigation, where you put your fertilizer through the drip system instead of, I've been doing a granular where we just can walk along with a bucket and, you know, measure out and sprinkle. So we don't want to pull the fabric up to do that.
Oh, my.
So I'm learning a whole lot. I also use a mist sprayer that goes on the back of a small tractor. And usually I only got one application of that done this spring, but I try and get two or three in a typical year. And that's usually a combination of, like, fish and seaweed and some sea minerals. Just that I'm foliar feeding the plants with that.
Good.
So, and what are you putting in the irrigation system for fertilizer in the organic system? What can you use?
I'm using a nitrogen product that comes, like, it looks like little balls that I have to dissolve in water.
Mm-hmm.
And it's made from Chilean nitrate. And then I'm also using a variety of things from a company called AEA. They're mostly micronutrients. There's some molasses, there's fish, there's crab, there's mm-hmm. all kinds of stinky stuff.
It must be good.
But the plants seem to be loving it, so.
Well, that's great. They found a home on your farm. That's good. You mentioned you had health problems that kind of got you thinking about organic. And tell us a little bit about the difference between raising things or raising your blueberries organically as opposed to conventional people do on their blueberries.
So I think the big difference, conventional would definitely be using insecticide and pesticide products, you know, to deal with weed control, to deal with a variety of bugs and pests. And you know, I'm very limited in what I can use those ways. So we try and rely on cultural things instead. Like, we put up a big box to try and attract a hawk. So that it would deal with the voles in the field, because there's another pest that we have, where if you were a conventional farmer, I'm sure they would just somehow go along and drop some poison on the ground. But, you know, we can't do that.
Well, did the hawk come?
He hasn't showed up. A family of starlings moved in, which was pretty upsetting. And then we use a device called Bird Guard. A lot of people ask us, how do you keep the birds out? So when customers or employees are not in the field, this thing is on, and it's basically speakers tied to the fence line, and there's a computer chip, and it randomizes and makes, like, hawk noises and predatory bird noises to chase out the birds from our field. But there are a few birds that are not afraid of it, mostly the red-winged blackbird and
You're on the river bottom. Yeah.
Oh, my. Yes. Fearless. Well, I suppose they like... Do you see a lot of damage by birds, by the red-winged blackbirds yet?
They just like to peck the... Well, so they're very territorial. So if they build a nest and have eggs, they'll attack a customer. We had a little girl get pecked on the head a few weeks ago. It's not... And then we have a lot of killdeer. They don't really do anything. I mean, they try and find a place. Once we use the fabric, I'm hoping that they might kind of move out, because they just like that mulch for making nests on the ground. And they just kind of squawk and make noise, but they don't really eat the berries.
Ah, good.
They're not a problem. Japanese beetles are a big problem, you know, for everyone.
You got any Japanese beetle tricks to share with us?
No, and I've tried about everything. The only thing I haven't tried is the nematodes. And the reason I haven't is it looks so complicated. Once you get them, you have to, like, order them, get them in the mail, and then you have to, like, apply them within a certain amount of time, and they have to be watered in. Well, I have the irrigation, but I don't have a sprinkler system to water that into the grass.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I just haven't figured out how I could accomplish that. But I've tried milk before. I would say that wasn't successful. I treated the field twice. It was very expensive. I've tried trapping them outside the field, this big trash can trap that I found on University of Missouri's website. I think I've tried a lot of things.
Yes.
I tried organically proved insecticidal soap, which was sprayed foliar, but I felt like I could taste it on the berries.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I've tried.
And I did that, like.
Oh, no.
Well, I have to say the nematode thing is kind of fascinating. Years ago, I was living up in Topanga Canyon, and I had chickens and dogs, and the flea infestation was unbelievable, and I sprayed nematodes. It was very dry there, too, but still, I got them, you know, into the soil somehow, and it was actually worked. Huh. So, for fleas, that is.
But so, do deer like blueberries? Do you have a problem with deer?
Oh, deer love blueberries, and we're surrounded by deer because we have 80 acres of timber. We have a 100-acre wetland between us and the river. So, when we did our orchard, we didn't initially fence it. And then we watched the deer annihilate the young trees.
Mm-hmm.
So I told my husband, I'm not putting a blueberry bush in the ground until there's an 8-foot deer fence around that entire field. So to my knowledge, the deer have never got in. They've tried it. Several people have seen them try and jump it from the roadside and fail to get over. We had one, a young button buck, hang itself in the fence trying to jump it. But we have had, and I mean, we have a fortress built around the field. We have an 8-foot woven wire fence. Then we had 24-inch chicken wire buried 6 inches and, you know, in the ground, 18 inches attached to the woven wire. Then right at the top of that, we have a hot wire around the fence that we turn on when there are ripe berries. And we had to add an additional hot wire lower last year. So it's, I feel like we've built a fortress and they still figure out how to get in. Some of the, you know, like this little rabbit last night.
But unfortunately, you are growing a very desirable crop. We are...
That's amazing
what you have to do.
Yeah.
We are talking to Kim Anderson from Blueberry Bottom Farm. We'll come back and ask her more about some of her growing adventures. I want to mention right now, this is KHOI Community Radio, and this is Donald on a Kitchen, Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. Welcome back. Welcome back. We are talking about blueberries and other good stuff grown from the farm. On Blueberry Bottom in Brighton, Iowa, Kim Anderson is the farmer there. She's been telling about the challenges of dealing with all of the other creatures that she shares the farm with.
Keeping it all organic. That's really
amazing.
The extra mile, I gotta say.
I want to ask about, you're also doing strawberries. Let's talk about strawberries first, and then we can get into how you manage the U-Pick operation. So you have something called a day-neutral strawberry. Talk about your strawberry operation.
So the strawberries came out of me attending a field day last year to look at blueberries in Minnesota and to see them using the fabric. I wanted to get an eyeball on what that looked like. And so, but that farm sells raspberries and strawberries and several other things. And so that was also part of the field day. And when we went to look at his strawberries, they're grown in caterpillar tunnels. So it's like tall enough that you can walk in and drive a small tractor in it. Like a little hoop structure, or a greenhouse. I guess a lot of people would think they look like greenhouses.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to say that I was paying attention, but I wasn't, like, taking notes or anything because I was thinking, well, this doesn't really apply to me. But then what happened is he told us that we could taste them.
Okay.
We went along and all found a ripe berry to taste, and then something just went off in my head, and I'm like, I have to do this. So it's definitely different. I'm not currently doing that as U-Pick because of the way it's designed in the tunnels, the aisles, the pathways between the rows are not very wide. So it really wouldn't work for, like, big families that bring strollers and wagons and things. And strawberries are low to the ground and hard for people to get down, on their knees to pick and so forth. So we just decided that we're currently going to do it the way they're doing it at the farm we visited, which is we pick them and then people just come to our farm stand and pick them up.
Very
already
good.
Picked.
Well,
so,
I would drive a long way for a good strawberry. There's plenty of strawberries around, but most of them don't have a lot of flavor.
Yes, you're getting one. So what is this day neutral stuff? Is that a new kind of strawberry?
I don't really know how long it's been around because I had never heard of it either. It's a version of an everberry. So the timing for me here in Southeast Iowa, we got them planted a little late, but ideally you would plant them maybe the end of April, beginning of May. They are grown as an annual. That is what is so different about them.
Hmm.
And then we were picking by the end of June, and we'll pick till the first frost.
A long strawberry season.
So what does happen with day neutrals, though, they don't love extreme heat. So they can handle it getting hot in the day. But from what I understand, if we get a stretch of those nights when you didn't, did you ever live somewhere where you didn't have air conditioning?
Yeah.
and you just want to lay on top of the covers at night because it's so miserable and hot. So if we go through a stretch of weather like that, they'll quit producing flowers. And we did just have a few hot days, and I watched. They did quit putting out flowers during that time. But then when the temperature cools back down, they pick right back up. So we still had berries to pick during that time, but it wasn't putting on anything new. So we burned holes in fabric, so it's very little weeding. I mean, there is some weeding involved, but not a lot. And we clip the runners. So far, we've been clipping runners about every other week because we don't want it to put out the runners. We want it to focus on
making berries,
producing a berry.
Yeah.
Good. And then for planting for next year, you just order new plants, or do you overwinter the runners?
No.
Huh?
You pull them in October. We'll put them in a big compost pile. We'll pull up the irrigation tubing, which is under the fabric in that situation, and we'll pull up all that fabric, roll it up, and we'll put a cover crop in the tunnels for over the winter. And then in the spring, we'll rototill that up and start again. And we'll buy all new starts and
Very lit. Well, now, are you also picking, like, chestnuts and hazelnuts and...
So the timing of those crops are more fall crops.
Uh-huh.
Hazelnut and pawpaw usually start the end of August. Mm-hmm. A lot of times Labor Day we're doing hazelnuts. My brother manages the orchard mostly, and he does open up sometimes when he can be here at the farm. He lives about an hour away for U-Pick, and people love that. The orchard's been hit really hard the last couple years with some drift from a neighbor that affected production.
Yeah.
And then with the drought. We don't have any water source over there to irrigate.
Mm-hmm.
So
pesticide?
Some of the pawpaw trees,
drift?
Really struggled.
Or was it herbicide? Did you have herbicide or pesticide drift?
We think it was herbicide drift from a conventional neighbor.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Good heavens.
All right, so tell us how you manage the U-Pick.
Yeah, you are a trusting person. You spend all your time creating this wonderful thing and keeping the critters out. And, well, people can be critters, too. They can come in hordes, you know. So how do you manage your U-Pick so you can keep your berries coming?
So my story is I started from the very beginning assigning rows. I don't know if either of you have been to a U-Pick, but I've been to a few. And the thing that I really didn't appreciate was, like, asking, now, what's ripe or where should I go, you know, in the field? And then getting sent on a wild goose chase where they're like, well, go to the way back. And then you go back there and there's nothing ripe back there. And then, you know, you work your way. So I like to ride the field and assign rows. So initially, people would just show up, and fortunately, the first couple of years, whatever needed picked, got picked. Enough people showed up, and I never did any advertising. I think the little local newspaper wrote an article about me, and I have a Facebook and Instagram page, and that was it. Well, then COVID hit. So the summer that COVID hit, our second day open, we opened at 9 in the morning, and at 10 after 10, I was out on the road trying to get people not to turn in to our field driveway because it was full, and we couldn't fit another car.
Wow.
And I just basically quickly made up a closed sign and put it out and told everybody that we were closed, and everybody that was currently there, we let go ahead and pick. And then when they got done, I came in the house and cried because I thought, now what am I going to do? And I had bought two freezers and all these gallon freezer bags thinking maybe I wouldn't even be able to open and I'd have to just pick everything I possibly could and freeze it for later, hoping I could sell it. But I switched to an appointment system, which somebody had recommended that I do from the very beginning, and I was very resistant to that. Because I'm the type of person that would get up this morning and think, oh, I've got 2 hours free. I'm going to run pick blueberries somewhere. Well, you know, if you have to have an appointment, that kind of rules out a person like me who's
spontaneous.
Yeah. So with some resistance, I spent the rest of the summer navigating appointments through, like, having to open up 5 screens. I had to have, you know, my Facebook Messenger open, my email, and people were text messaging. I mean, it was an administrative nightmare.
Yeah.
but we got through it, and in the end, I really did love it, and so we stuck with it, and now we are using a different software this year that's been a little bit of a problem through our website, but for several years, I used SignUp Genius. And it was well worth the money and wonderful program to use. But I have to tell you that COVID year, what I said is, you know, everybody's lives were canceled. So every vehicle that pulled in was a Suburban with a granny driving and 10 kids in tow.
Oh, my.
Ooh, yeah.
Oh, my.
So because people had lost their daycare. Kids didn't go to camp. They didn't have a ball game. And they were looking for anything to do outside.
Oh, it's nice to be needed. I'm glad people love you, but I can imagine that it's got to set you back a little bit when you're met with a crowd like that. My goodness, because too many people can start trampling and maybe just doing a bit of damage if you don't have a little bit of an organizational plan.
So people tell us that they love coming here for a couple of reasons. It's clean, well taken care of, and it's organized. Mm-hmm. So when they get here, we have them start off at a hand wash station. We require everyone to wash their hands because they might touch a berry that they don't pick. And then they check in. We tell them what row they're assigned to. We put a stream sticky note on their bucket so that when they walk away from the stand and be like, what did she say? What row am I in? They just look at their note and see what row they're in. We have driven the row. We tell them like tips like, okay, the south end of that row is loaded. So go down and start down there or survey the row and the middle of it looks best. So pick there. We want them to be happy with what they get. If they've never picked blueberries, we give them our tips on how to figure out which berries are the ripest and best. We want them to be happy with what they go home with. And then when they check out, we just go by volume. We don't want to spend a lot of time weighing things. So we just used our buckets, or if they pick in their own ice cream bucket that says 1 gallon on it, and they filled it, 1 gallon. We just do it by volume. And then we started adding some things at the stand. We're carrying someone else's local honey. We're doing a lot more of what we pick blueberries being available at the stand for people to just stop in when we're open. You know, I did that initially for elderly neighbors that told me that they'd love some blueberries, but they didn't feel like they could go out there and pick them themselves, mm-hmm. even though I tell them it's pretty easy. But then you find that a lot of the people that do that are maybe just really busy people and they don't have time to pick. A lot of different reasons why people want to just buy them already.
Okay, so you don't need a reservation to drop in and shop.
Right. Correct. And new this year, we have a store on our website. It's been a little bit slow to pick up, but there have been several people that have been ordering through the website. What's so great about that is then I just get an email with their order. We pack it. They paid online. They literally just stop and tell us their name, and we hand them a bag full of blueberries.
And you know how much to pick.
Yes. Yeah.
Great.
We kind of have a system. I have two different crews. I have a crew of Amish young women that live in the local Amish community that mm-hmm. I consider to be my friends, and they're just wonderful workers. They pick twice a week, and then we pack all that. And then I have a crew of teenage girls. So we're mostly a girl crew. We call them the Blueberry Girls. So.
Right. Well,
and they work at the stand, and they help pick, and they help pack, and they weed, and everybody does all the different tasks.
Good. Many hands. I'm glad because as nice as blueberries are, I'm sure you certainly couldn't keep up with the demand, for goodness sake. Do blueberries need the bushes themselves need to be trimmed at the end of the year, or you just leave those things kind of to go to next year?
So they're gorgeous in the fall. All the leaves turn red and it looks like an entire field of burning bushes. Ugh. So it's beautiful. And then the leaves fall off, and they set their fruit in the fall for the next year.
Ooh.
So it's really interesting. You can see the fruit buds in the fall forming. And then we prune. All the bushes have to get a haircut now. Now, the first couple years when they were small, not so much. It was more like just cutting off things that were broken or damaged. But now they get a full haircut. And that happens January to March. So people drive by and see us out there wading through the snow and so forth, and they're just like, what are they doing out there now?
You're farming. Yes, you are. Oh, good. Yeah, I didn't know that. So even if the fruit is set on the branches, you still have to go in and selectively prune.
Yes.
Huh.
So how many acres of blueberries do you have in all of this fortress?
I have 5.5 acres. They are in 98 rows. The rows are spaced 12 foot apart, and the plants are 5 foot apart in the row.
So amazing.
They're lined up so nice that you can look at them, like, down the row. You can look at it diagonal, you know, how they're lined up. And then there's 2,563 blueberry plants.
Wow.
Neat and tidy. This woman has got her finger on her blueberries.
And there is, if you want to go see it, there is a Practical Farmers of Iowa field day on Thursday, July 11th from 10 a.m. to noon, where Kim will be there showing other people how this happens.
Pretty, pretty amazing. Well, we're going to take another little break here and come back and maybe talk a little bit about eating blueberries. I would sort of like to get into that.
It's very healthy.
I like the eating part. This is KHOI Community Radio. You can find out more at www.khoifm.org. Find out more about this radio station. Find out more about the Donalana Kitchen. Welcome back. This is the Donalana Kitchen. We're talking berries. Good time of year for that. We're talking to Kim Anderson. Oh, it sounds like you've got a wonderful place, and lots of good berries. What, besides picking them and selling them and tending them and keeping the rabbits out, how did you like to eat your blueberries, besides just fresh?
Yeah, it's so funny. People always talk about that. Day at the stand right before I ran up here to be on your show, there were some ladies sharing different websites and, you know, the cobbler that they like on the Pioneer Woman website versus somebody's muffins that has just loaded with blueberries. And it was so cute. They were just sitting there writing down all these different recipes that they like. The one that I make quite often is on a website called Alexandria's Kitchen. And it's called blueberry buttermilk breakfast cake or something like that. It's delish. I make my grandma's basically no-bake blueberry cheesecake and always make my own blueberry pie filling. A customer shared one last year that's so easy that my teen girls love to make it. They just get one of those pre-made graham cracker crusts. They throw a couple handfuls of blueberries in it. And then they mix up a box of the cheesecake pudding mix and pour it over the top and put it in the fridge. And they've got themselves a really quick and easy little blueberry cheesecake.
That's what you can see.
So the blueberries are not cooked then. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but still, Donna, you mentioned before these wonderful things, they don't have pits. I just got through dealing with a whole bunch of sour cherries, and sour cherries are lovely.
Yeah. We have cherry pitting rituals.
Pit the cherries or deal with the seeds. Blueberries are a very, very nice invention.
Oh, yeah. When I was doing a lot of catering and I had to make fruit desserts, I would always do blueberries because it's way less labor intensive in terms of preparing the fruit. And everybody loves blueberries.
You said you have a good cobbler that you like to do?
Well, it's just that one where you make you put the butter, the deep dish baking pan, and put the blueberries in with some sugar and then you, on top of that, you make a biscuit dough.
Oh, biscuits. Yeah.
Yeah. A sweetened biscuit mm-hmm. dough. And, you know, just plop it in blobs around on the top, because of course it spreads when it heats. And that makes a really delicious deep dish, you know, berry cobbler.
Blueberries.
My grandmother did that.
What's so nice about blueberries, they go from the bush to the hand to the mouth really, really easily.
I have to say, I don't know how you deal with this, Kim, because I'm one of those pickers. I can't not eat while I pick. So,
how do you deal with what do you call that? Loss?
Eat as you go, right?
Do you plan for, of course, a certain amount going directly into, well, actually, I refer to that as field canning things. You just eat from the garden. So how do you deal with that, Kim?
So we have a top 10 list that we post at our hand wash station. So while people are washing their hands, they can kind of read our tips, like don't pick with sunglasses on because they look more ripe, those kinds of things. That's the one that surprises people the most. But we say that we expect them to sample, that we would, you know, you're not supposed to sample in the grocery store, I don't think. But anyway, we expect that, but we consider a sample 5 berries.
Uh-huh.
We try and put a number on it just so people will know that it's okay, but we don't really want you to make a meal.
That's a good way to do it.
Parents with little children that they're having hard time with that, like the kids, more than he's putting in his bucket.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
When they come up, they usually say, charge us a couple extra dollars.
How much my son ate. Right. Because you don't want to stop the children from eating the blueberries. That's really good for them. So,
this is a good time of year. And with the 4th of July coming up, I kind of dipped into the Donalena Kitchen archive. We have a little bit of audio here about a recipe that Donna discovered a few years ago. It seems a bit of a fuss, but it certainly is seasonal. So let's listen to that.
Let's consider some red, white, and blue. There's all kinds of red things to eat and blue things to eat. And, well, Donna, you ran across a really interesting recipe that celebrates all those colors.
Yeah, there's a little 4th of July special here. It's made with shaved ice. Now, I'm looking at this and thinking, maybe I'm going to invest in one of those little shaved ice machines. There are many, ranging from, I think the website said $28 all the way up to quite expensive, but it looks like a fun, low-calorie summer option. So this recipe was to get your shaved ice machine and refrigerate some glasses.
We're talking snow cones at home.
Snow cones.
Yes, very good.
So this had 3 layers of color, and of course the bottom one was the blue, and that was, the recipe is you take a pint of blueberries, 2 tablespoons of cassis, which is actually black currant liquor, a couple of tablespoons of sugar, and some lemon juice, and you just kind of munch it all together either in the blender or something like that. So you put that one on the bottom with the shaved ice. Then the middle layer, which is white, is a little thicker, so it keeps the blue and the red from commingling. And that was banana coconut milk. So you take a 14-ounce can of coconut milk and 3, they say, overripe bananas. You want them really, really sweet. Put them in the blender and mush those up. And that makes your second layer. And then on top of that, you add more shaved ice and you put in strawberries with a little sugar, you know, so they juice out. And this recipe had a little orange blossom water in the strawberries, which sounds good. So you've got your red, white, and blue, bing, bang, bong.
Well,
healthy, not too many calories, and easy to do.
Good. If people would like to find this recipe, give them the website that they can go by.
Oh, boy, this is on tastingtable.com. And the title is Chip Off the Old Block, Make a Red, White, and Blue Shave Ice for the 4th of July.
Good.
So tastingtable.com.
Ooh, so think about summer, think about berries. Kim, tell us how people can find your website, and we'll talk about the field day coming up too. How can they find you, Kim?
So it's www.blueberrybottomfarm.com. And there is a way on there to sign up for picking appointments. We are currently full. the demand for our blueberries is, like, amazing. And even though we continue to add appointments, sometimes we just can't get everyone in. And that doesn't feel good, but in the other sense, it does feel good that we're getting everything picked.
Oh, that good news.
Yeah, and the field day, I've been a part of PFI for the last 10 years. I'm also on the board for the Iowa Organic Association. So they, along with a lot of other organizations, are co-sponsoring that field day. And we're going to talk about some of the challenges, and we're going to look at my fence and all the things I'm doing to try and keep critters. And ultimately, I guess it helps keep people out, too, like you said. So, just talk about some of the growing practices for both the blueberries and strawberries. I definitely don't know as much about strawberries since I'm new to growing them in this way, but I'm happy to share with what I've learned so far.
Well, this But this was a good experience, and it's good to hear blueberry tales.
You know,
like
it sounds like what you're doing is it takes a lot of creativity and invention and wow, marvelous what you've created. And delicious, too, I'm sure.
So thank you for being with us on the Donna Lana Kitchen today, Kim. Thank you very much.
We also want to say...
Thanks for having me.
Good.
We'll try to come visit sometime. It sounds marvelous. And for those of you who want you pick berries in the center of the state, we have the Judy Henry Berry Patch Report. She says they have lots of really, really... gigantic blueberries this year from all of the rain. They are open over by Nevada Monday through Saturday, 8 to 5, and on the 4th of July, 8 to 12. And they will be at the Ames Farmers Market this Saturday where you can just buy the blueberries. I will be down there buying my blueberries.
I think most of Ames will be down there by, I remember
better
long
go early because she'll sell out too.
Long lines.
I think
yes,
it's a great blueberry year and we're all happy about that.
Yes,
so.
Thank goodness for the rain. That's very good. That's very good. And, when I think of blueberries, I think of the book, Blueberries for Sale. Remember that? Robert McCluskey.
I think of the Jamberry book. Raspberry jam or something, and berry and blueberries. And,
always good things.
Yeah, it's a kid thing.
It's a kid thing, and berries are very good. Oh, yes, blueberries for sale. Oh, there's a Blueberries for Sale cookbook. Thank you for bringing that up, Kim.
I'm going to go right to Amazon and look that one up. Okay, Blueberries for Sale cookbook.
Oh, thank you, Kim. Great. And thanks to the audience for being with us today around our kitchen table. Donna, tell folks about our podcast.
Yeah, the radio show is also in a podcast format, which will be published every Thursday while the show is live on Tuesday. So you can hear it or recommend it to your friends anywhere in the world that they can get podcasts. They can hear what's going on in Iowa. So
yes, if you can't get
just
enough.
Just go to Donna Lana Kitchen, wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you can't get enough of Donna Lana, there you have it. We're here live at noon every Tuesday. Yes.
And thank you, Kim, the blueberry lady.
Right. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We come to you Tuesday at noon, and we're repeated on this fine radio station at 7 p.m. on Tuesday evening, or you can go to the khoyfm.org website and stream and download and do the things and put it on your device. You can find us a lot of different places, plus a lot of other good programming on this radio station, because community radio is made up of people who are passionate about what we talk about here. So that's good. We've had music by the Barn Owl Band today. As usual, you heard Dashing White Sergeant, Oyster River, Snow Queen, and we'll go out with the Flowers of Edinburgh. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
Excellent engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life. Thank you.